This teaching comes to you from the team at St. Mark's, Darling Point, Sydney. We hope that it blesses you.
I suspect we preferred if Jesus had not risen. It would be a far less complicated end to the story. A tragedy is sad, but at least a tragedy is manageable on our own terms. It fits with our sense that the world should be tidy and organized, that everything should have its right place. Jesus' place surely is in the tomb, like a shirt in a drawer or a car in a garage. Now, this needn't be the sentiment of someone who wants Jesus dead and done with. It could be the perspective of someone who admires him genuinely. We come to the tomb as the women came, with our spices, to anoint his lifeless body. And that is where we can keep him, to memorialize him, as if Easter were the religious equivalent of Anzac Day. And perhaps that's why you have come here today. But this dead Jesus disturbs and disrupts nothing. He leaves us with a vague notion of Christian values from which we may pick and choose as we suit, an ethical code that we can mould to our own lifestyle. He challenges us to no particular change. Safe in the tomb, he becomes an option. But what did the women find carrying their spices? The first thing to notice is what they didn't find. The stone was rolled away and the grave was empty. The tomb was vacant. And all the rationalizations must have flooded in at that point. We've come to the wrong tomb. Someone's taken the body. There must be some mistake. But that's not it. And this is where things get weird. While they were wondering about this, the women had a breathtaking encounter with heavenly glory itself. Luke says, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living amongst the dead? He is not here. He is risen." That's time for an honesty moment here. You might think that I should be embarrassed. As a 21st century educated adult, to stand here in this crowded room and tell you, without a flicker of irony, that this is what I believe actually happened. You might be saying, "He is not here, I can believe. But he is risen seems unlikely, to say the least." And surely this is where you're hoping I'll pull out my modern academic theological trickery and say something like, "Of course, we aren't meant to take this literally. It's a metaphor for the hope within us all. Nothing out of the ordinary happened that day. Just the regular rising and setting of the sun with the dead still dead and some of the living, poor things, imagining that they saw angels." But these explanations are just another attempt to keep the world closed, to keep death where it belongs, to keep Jesus very much in his box, to keep the stone rolled across the tomb. What we call the miraculous is not incidental to Christianity, as if it could simply be redacted from the story. It is essential to it, because if Jesus is risen, risen indeed, then nothing is where we left it. But before the women can gather their thoughts, the angelic beings speak to them. "Remember," they say, "how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day rise again." Then they remembered his words. See, Jesus wasn't making things up as he went along. He had a strange, unsettling plan that he was consistently following. Not that his disciples understood it at the time. That's one of the great themes of the Gospels, is the way the disciples don't understand what's going on until after the events. They have no category to make sense of it. They are more modern, perhaps, in this respect than we imagine them. But now, with the tomb empty, and the blaze of divine glory revealed to them, everything falls into place. They hadn't grasped that he would rise from the dead. They could scarcely believe that he would die, but he had told them all. He told them it all multiple times. His crucifixion did not result from a mistake. The chaos and suffering of Good Friday was part of his design. This redefined reality for the women, and so it does for us. Or rather, reality is revealed for what it always was. The grand design of the Creator of all things. Everything in nature and in history fits into the purposes of the sovereign God, however chaotic they might seem for us right now. Boy, do we know chaos. The fundamental miracle is that there should exist anything at all. After we accept that, a man rising from the dead is not as surprising as it first sounds. The God whose power gives existence to the glory of the universe is powerful enough to overcome even death. Easter Day, then, is not an embarrassment, but reveals to us the new normal. Or better, it is the true normal, stunningly revealed, shockingly disclosed. He is risen indeed. And so the question becomes, what are we to do with this reality? How are we to live in it? Now that it has been revealed to us, what is life like after the resurrection of Jesus from the dead? The women, of course, weren't at first believed. Luke tells us that when they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and all the others, but they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. And we can imagine the condescension of the male disciples saying to themselves and to one another, who would trust the words of some grief-stricken women, now overcome with excitement and surely deluded as ever? We should note this skepticism, by the way. What was being reported to them didn't fit into a pre-existing template. We do know that we humans are prone to see what we expect to see. We call this confirmation bias. It's a very powerful part of the way we deal with the world around us, that we see what we are to expect to see. But what the women told them was so opposite to what they expected that it seemed like nonsense to them. It was a disconfirmation of what they expected. The Jesus of the resurrection didn't fit their predetermined expectations. And we shouldn't be too hard on them. Do we not see our own skeptical selves in them? Perhaps we don't say, this is nonsense, for that would be too rude. We say, yes, he's risen in our hearts. Or we say, yes, he's alive in the sense that his message still lives on today. I've read several politicians and other public figures doing their best, and good on them, to wish the community a happy Easter, and they reach for a sort of symbolic secular reinterpretation of this season, of this day, as a symbol of hope in dark times, or a metaphor for new beginnings, or a story about the resilience of the human spirit, resilience being the buzzword of the weekend. Again, we see the impulse here to keep Jesus manageable. We want to avoid the disruption that a risen Christ would mean. Like the disciples, we are trying to roll the stone back over the tomb. After all, who's got time for a Jesus who's actually risen from the dead? How can I fit him in? I've got perhaps a place for a Christ who is admirable. But a Christ who is risen, well, that means worship. That will mean me fitting in with him. But not all the disciples were so skeptical. Now, Peter gets a hard time throughout the Gospels. He's the one who denies Christ, don't forget. He's always the one who's somewhat of a buffhead, doesn't quite understand what Jesus is saying, takes it all the wrong way. But here, Peter, here's what the women say, and says, I must go and check it out. So Peter, we read, got up and ran to the tomb where he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. That word wonder might be better translated amazed or astonished. He's filled with amazement. He did not yet fully grasp it, but reality had outgrown his understanding. He could no longer assess Jesus from a safe distance. He was open now to what the risen Lord meant for him, and it would redefine him for the rest of his life. To tell the truth, I don't think Peter ever fully comprehended what went on, what it meant that Jesus rose from the dead. It surpasses human understanding. But he does remain in wonder at what he sees in Jesus, and it will take him further and further in life. It is this truth that he will live by. And it is this truth, this reality, that he will die for. Could that be you this Easter? Could you be like Peter here? Perhaps you came with your spices, ready to anoint a dead body, memorialize a comfortable Jesus pretty much still in the ground. Could you leave here today a little bit less comfortable, a little less neat and tidy, filled with wonder and amazement? For the Jesus in the ground is containable, like the packing material around the important things in life, your career, your education, your holidays, your home. You fit him in if you can. We live busy, stimulated lives, filled with all sorts of good things. We don't want a Jesus that overflows to take those things over. But the Jesus who is alive is awesome. He moves from the periphery to the center. He can never be merely an accessory. He is the Lord. Now that is at first an inconvenient truth, for it means we are no longer in control. We can no longer put him in his place. We are compelled to follow him. But here's the deeper truth. Jesus will not stay where you put him because he has not left you where you are. The one who would not stay in the tomb will not leave you in yours. Your fear, your sin, your death, these are no longer prisons. The risen and living Jesus is a wonderfully inconvenient truth because he will not stay where we put him. That is our profoundest hope. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Please visit our website at www.stmarksdp.org to subscribe to our new episodes, browse more resources, and find more information about the community of St. Mark's.